I hope that's all right for everybody. The subject of the talk is a quote from a song that a Christian sect sing every day, and the song says, it's a gift to be simple, it's a gift to be free. And so it's really a talk about simplicity. Jack Kornfield, in one of his books, said, at the end of your life you can ask yourself three questions. Have I lived well with wisdom? Have I loved well? And have I let go? And so the third question is the one we're dealing with tonight. Have I let go? As one Zen teacher said, why do I need to let go? Because if I don't, it all piles up. Piles up. It's a kommitztabär. If I don't let go, by itself, it will all pile up. So, in other words, there needs to be an active intention to let go. Things don't let go by themselves. The opposite. They tend to pile up on top of our heads if we don't do something, if we don't have a sense of letting things go. And we want to, sometimes the most good intentions that we have just give us more stress because we forgot about letting go. Our intentions as parents is often to get it right, to be right, to do the best for ourselves, our children, our family. And somehow or other we keep getting caught in the trap that all the trying to do the best thing for our family or children, whatever, ends up with more pressure, more stress, and more load, omis, on ourselves and sometimes on the children. And so when we think how complicated it is to run a life here in the Western world, getting things right, getting our money and getting our work right and getting our relationships right and getting our house right and getting our education right and getting our inner life right and going off to all sorts of classes and yoga and everything to get the inner life right and get the body right and get it all right. And such a big mission. And it just trying to be happy, and it all piles up. It's all too much. And unfortunately, there is a cultural support in the culture for neediness, for needing more, for wanting to do it better, for wanting to get it right. The culture supports that. It's not enough to have an old car, you need a better car. It's not enough to have that, you need the extra. It's not enough to educate the kid like this, you need the extra, the chugim and the this and the that. So the culture supports the extra, the more, so we almost think it's norm, and we forget how beautiful it is to be simple and what that might mean for us. One of the slogans in the Buddhist teaching, at the beginning of every, more or less every time, he says, how do you start? You sit down under a tree or in a cave and bring your attention here and start to practice. And at the same time, those first words, he always says, and give up fretting for the world. Now, fretting is a difficult English word, but it really means lidog, de god, fretting is worrying about the world, like what I don't have, what's missing now. It's that voice, what's missing, that you just actively need to drop it. Because otherwise it's going to invade your meditation just like it invades our life. What's missing? What's not right? what I need to fix, what I need to get before I can meditate, what I need, and when I meditate, what I don't have, what the conditions are, this, you know, non-stop. So, because the more or less one thing that all Buddhists will agree, you know, like whatever Buddhist you go to, whether it's a Zen Buddhist or a Theravada Buddhist or a Tibetan Buddhist or an Icelandic Buddhist or a doesn't matter which Buddhist, everyone will agree that the bottom line message of the Dharma is don't cling. Don't cling, don't hold on. That's the bottom line. There's no Buddhist that will say it's good to cling. Clinging is, can you say Hebrew clinging?
Yeah.
Lachez. Yeah. No Buddhist will say that. Let go, renunciation, vitur is fundamental. To give up attachment is fundamental, is the source of liberation from suffering. So letting go and being simple is not just a matter of kind of good thing to do that make us perhaps more deeply happy. It's actually fundamental to our spiritual life. And there's a little story in one of the texts about the Buddha and one of the monks that were wandering around in the forest, and all of a sudden they heard this incredible laughter. And the laughter came from somewhere deep in the forest. And the Buddha said to his monk, go and find out, what's this laughter, this hysterical laughter, not ordinary laughter, but absolutely hysterical laughter. Go, who is it? What's the laughter coming from? And the monk went off and he came back and he said, there is a monk sitting under a tree, rolling in laughter. And he said, do you know, the monk said, do you know who I was? I used to be a king of the kingdom nearby. That was my role. I was a king. I didn't sleep at night without having a troop of guards around my bed. I couldn't do anything. I was so anxious that everyone will try and take my kingdom, take my money, take my gold. I had to have soldiers around me every minute. I was worried night and day. I didn't sleep at night. And I eventually left and became a monk. And now I sit under a tree. I have nothing. I have my robes. I have a little food every day. I have my bowl. And my mind wanders in the forest like a deer grazing on the grass. It's a nice image which is appearing several times in the text. The mind wandering freely like a deer, como ayal, or tzvi, just eating the grass like this. So it's a different picture of simplicity, of freedom, of renunciation. Our problem is that we're very afraid to let things go. One of the main obstacles to letting stuff go is that we will feel empty without it. We will feel nobody if we don't have our roles and our things and our identities and our possessions and the way we want to do things. We will feel empty, or we will feel nobody, or we will feel we don't have a role, or we don't have a mission, or we don't have something. We'll feel the self doesn't really agree. The self doesn't like to let go. But whenever the self lets go of possessions, of needs, of demands, of complications, actually after it happens, the self feels very light and very free. It happens all the time, same thing. At the beginning, the self says, I can't let this go. I need my ambition. I need my projects. I need my money. I need my this. I need my education of my children. I need my this, or whatever it is. But when it actually happens, the self feels actually, well, I could have done this before. It wasn't that bad, and I feel lighter and freer. It happens every time, same. Sometimes people say to me, you Buddhists are friars, friarin. You just sort of accept things. You don't fight. You're And I think it's a compliment to live happily. Let's be Buddhist friarin. Actually, it's the opposite. It's standing our ground without needing so much, and without struggle, without fighting. It looks maybe a little bit like being a Buddhist friar, but it's not. It's actually the opposite, because the ones that are afraid of being a friar, of being less, of being not having, of being have problem. So may we all be happy Buddhist friarin. But we have to really work and be courageous to let things go, because they really are sticky inside us. They really stick to us. The habits, the social habit, the life that says you must get a big screen TV because everyone else has a big screen. Who says? Who says you need a TV? Who says? But the society says that we all do it. But also, of course, inner habits are the difficult ones. And habits, patterns, make us too much. There is too much. We end up with too much. It's the habits and the patterns that are stuck inside that give us this trouble, this stress. Too much information. I'm finding it's a problem. I just can't deal with the amount of information that's coming my way. They're too much. And I'm trying to be simple, and I manage for a few days, and then there's 100 emails, and I think, you know, where's the monk under the tree in the forest with his mind wandering like a deer with 100 emails every day? And, you know, it is really hard. Whatever way you look, it's too much. So information is just a small little dogma of the way things are. Too much. Too much for the mind, too much for the heart. We get contracted by the too much. The heart can't cope. The heart needs to be open and free, but it can't cope with all the stuff coming in. But so we have to do it. We have to do something about it ourselves. We can't leave it to anyone else. Every one of us, the teacher sitting right here, and you sitting there, and any role we have, no difference, we all have to do it. There's a nice story about that from Nasruddin. A mother with a kid. It's actually a perfect story for parenting. A mother came with a kid saying to Nasruddin, please tell my kid to get off the habit of eating sweets. Mamtakim. Please help my kid to get out of addiction to sweets, to Mamtakim. So Nasruddin said, okay, come back in a week and we'll do it. So the mother came back with the kid after 1 week, and Nasruddin said, come back in another week and we'll do it. So after a week, the mother came back with the kid. Nasruddin turned to the kid and said, give up sweets. And the kid said, okay, all right, and stopped eating sweets. Then the mother came to Nasruddin and said, well, you could have done that 2 weeks ago. Why didn't you do that then? Nasruddin said, 2 weeks ago I was addicted to sweets. First of all, I had to get off sweets, then I could tell the kid to get off sweets. It's a good thing for parenting to remember. What we model for our children is what they really learn, not what we tell them, but who we are for them and what we model for them. That's the real message, not what we say. I was just in America. I was teaching in California for 2 or 3 weeks last month, in June, and there's a new advert, a new big poster for McDonald's hamburgers that you see on the side of Route 101 and Route 881 and Route whatever 17 and all the Californian highways, big posters with a McDonald's hamburger, and it says underneath, "Crafted for your craving." I couldn't believe it. I saw that. "Crafted for your craving." And it made me feel so, I want a big advert up there, as big as a house, saying, "Crafted for your renunciation. Craft your own letting go. Craft your freedom." The craft is a wonderful word. The craving, oof. So we have to have a craft, in a way, for letting go. It's a skill. It's a craft. Craft is miyumanut. It doesn't come easily. We have to really look carefully at our life in this crafting our freedom and ask, you know, do I really need this? Is this really wise? Is this really necessary? Is this really contributing to me and my family being happy? And very often, if we really ask that question, we get an answer, actually no. We'll manage without. When you really think about it, everything brings a cost. And we just don't notice the price we pay for this and this and this and this. Because often it's in the name of goodness, of getting it right, as I say, of something that we feel will make us happy or make us better or make our family better. And so we don't notice that everything also has a cost. Every medicine is a poison, as I learned for many years in the herbal business. There's no such thing as a medicine that's not also a poison. So very often it's that voice in us that says, actually we let go of the voice that says, we need to get better. We need to change something. We need to fix something. We need to do it right. It's very often that voice that we can actually let go of. And another voice can come in and say, actually, I'm all right. Things are all right as they are. Let's keep it simple. Let's just be with what is. A little bit longer, take a little space, let's breathe together and be with what is. And just see that there is in there a happiness, a joy in the simplicity which we didn't think about before. So I'll read the poem or the song from this Christian sect. The song just says, "It is the gift to be simple. It is the gift to be free. It is the gift to come down to where we ought to be. And when we find ourselves in this place just right, it will be in the valley of love and delight." This place, when we come down to this place, we'll find ourselves in the valley of love and delight. I see it very often in, even now with my own grandchildren, and have a lot of time with the grandchildren. And there's always a need in the, you know, there's a restless need because we're in samsara. So there's always going to be restless need. But you don't need to respond to that straight away or immediately or automatically or with habits. The kid, wait a minute. What's happening now? Maybe this leaf falling from the tree is as interesting as a movie on television. Well, I want the movie on television to shut up the kid, but what about the leaf that's just now falling from the tree? Wow, look at that. And suddenly the shift is changed and something has changed and we're back into simplicity again. So it's a craft, it's a... Within this, in a more spiritual direction, there's another word we can use, which is surrender. And sometimes we are demanding of ourselves, for example, experiences in meditation. We want, again, to fix our restlessness. And so we want an experience in meditation called peace. And very often we're looking for peace. And the looking is, again, more of something. Whereas actually what we need is surrender, is to let go, and we find we are in the valley of love and delight, which we didn't notice before because we were just looking for peace over there. And so this sense of surrender is a very important movement inside meditation practice or all spiritual practice. It's a sense of dropping into where we are. And very often we think surrender is kind of a failure. Here we are again, Buddhist friar, to be the Buddhist friars, friarin, the Buddhist failures in the fight of society. Actually, if we look at surrender, firstly, it's active. It is not passive. It's a movement in the soul to say, I accept and I drop into what is. And so it's a movement, and in a somewhat subtle way, it's taking charge. It's not giving up. It's not being a failure. It's actually taking charge of ourselves, but in a much more kind of, to use, I don't know what, brain language, it's right brain. It's let go into the unknown, for example. How do we find the unknown if we're looking for it? We're looking for the unknown with the known. So the unknown always escapes us. The only way to be with the unknown is surrender to it. And in the meditation experience or in the spiritual life, we're always on the edge of the unknown. We're always, in a way, there. So we don't really know where is quiet. Where's the place of quiet? I don't feel it. The thoughts are coming and moving and racing across, and my body a bit hurts, and I'm worried about what my kid's doing outside, and I'm blah, blah, blah. So, and I want quiet. But all, if you just sort of drop out of it, or drop through it, is probably a better word, in a way, to drop through it, to surrender, in the middle of all that mess. In that surrender, suddenly there is a moment of peace that you didn't know where to find before, because you can't find it. It's just finding it is more fixing, is more trying, is more... Doesn't mean to say that you there's no kind of direction. We need to be very, very serious about our spiritual life and very determined. It's not that. It's not that we just give up everything and say, well, surrender means I don't need to do anything. We need to be very directed, because it does need a shift in the mind that is quite major and difficult in a way, and long time, and needs a lot of patience. But within that direction, that we shift direction and we're really determined to keep going over there, within that we need lots and lots of surrender. And lots of just surrendering into the moment again and again. I drop all the stuff, I drop all the extra, I drop all the neediness, I drop all the what's missing, I drop all of that, I drop all the, just drop through it all into a more simple place. In mindfulness there is some great simplicity. It's often not stressed so much, but simplicity is one of the core values in mindfulness and core benefits of mindfulness, because it's where the mind is just simply meeting an object, which is the breath or any other object. There's a simplicity in that, a directness in that meeting place, which is less processing, less busyness, less understanding, less analysis, less doubt, less confusion. It's just the mind, the breath, mind mixing with breath, as they say in Tibet. The mind mix with breath like a good daisa. And that's it. And so there's a simplicity in mindfulness. You look at the sky directly. Don't need any intermediate, or you don't need any analysis. You don't need any. You're like a child, full of wonder and openness, looking at the sky, looking at the leaves, looking at anything, listening to sound or the bell, or that training of mindfulness is a training itself in simplicity. Just a few moments to address our, if you like, spiritual life renunciation, which is this process of letting go, of surrendering to, in a way, what we don't need in the first place. Renunciation is a primary quality that changes everything that we do and all the other qualities into a spiritual quality. So, for example, generosity is a positive quality, but if it's not combined with renunciation, it does exactly what I was talking about in the beginning, just adding more load to us. Giving here, giving there, being generous to this, being there. Where am I needed now? I need to give here, I need to give there. A sort of great busyness around generosity. Whereas renunciation is letting go and seeing generosity happening by itself. I don't own the world, it's not really mine, so I'm just passing things through, just things coming to my way and I pass on in a great simplicity. The generosity itself without renunciation is my generosity, is me. Renunciation is letting me go, letting myself be less busy with the act of giving or the act of receiving. It's a small example. But renunciation makes everything more of a spiritual quality. Makes wisdom, mindfulness, attention, mind qualities, they all become spiritual qualities with this movement of renunciation, of being less busy with me, what I need, what I am, what I want to be of myself, what I want to fix, what I want, what is missing, and so on. So it's just to be aware of that, and fundamental renunciation is to renounce that our tendency that things should be another way, that things should be different from what they are. Now, we fundamental renunciation is to renounce that, to let it go, that things should be another way, that things should be another way, that different from what they are. And what the self is always looking for that. What is wrong now? And this is a big renunciation, that things should be different from what they are, things should be another way. It's the beginning, middle and end of stress. It's where stress is located, right in the middle of there, that things should be another way. It makes us a life of stress. And on a deeper level, I'm not going to go into deep Dharma tonight, but just a small reminder that it's often not so difficult to let things go, because if we look carefully, we see that things go by themselves. In any event, we can't hang on to things. But the self really thinks it can hang on and is really busy with hanging on to stuff, but if you look carefully, things go by themselves. So the more we practice and the more we're close to the reality of change, which is sometimes painful for us because the things that we want also go, then but it also makes it easier to surrender, to let go, because we notice how things go themselves. Everything goes, but everything goes anyway. Everything passes anyway. Everything changes anyway. Whatever we do about it, whatever the self says I should fix and transform and stop and so on. And then when we notice that things change anyway, and we can't hold on to things anyway, life becomes that much more of a dance. We're less in control, and we're more joyful and simple. And the Dakinis do it all. Dakinis are female. You know, anyone know Dakinis? Female dancing angels, or a Tibetan image of the way the world is all dancing female energies. They're called Dakinis. A bit like Shekhinah, but many of them, many of them. And if we see every thought of ours is a Dakini, and every action of ours is a Dakini, and every person is a Dakini, they're all these dancing, changing female energies. So we just go with that. Thank you. So let's all sit up for a minute, if you don't mind, and just have a few minutes of just to process what I've been saying, to think about it, to contemplate.